This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise. WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest news. But first, the Obama Presidential Center isn't the only major development in the works in Chicago right now. The so-called 1901 project is expected to transform the Near West Side and the area around the United Center. That neighborhood has long been a symbol of both opportunity and struggle. It was once a thriving place for working families and businesses, but decades of disinvestment have caused significant harm, economic issues, even gaps in healthcare and basic necessities. Recently, some of that has started to turn around. So, as shovels hit the ground on the 1901 project, how are local residents feeling? Do concerns about gentrification still remain? In this episode of the pod, you'll hear from some people who live and work in the area. But before that, I talk one-on-one with Danny Wirtz, the CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks and a key force behind the new mixed-use development project. What's the overall vision? That is where I asked him to begin. Here's Danny Wirtz.
Our family's been on the site of the United Center and previously the Chicago Stadium for just about 90 years, so almost 100 years. We've been on this site, you know, with ownership of the Chicago Stadium, and then in 1992, transitioning that to the building of the United Center with the Reinstor family. And so we had been sitting sort of in this kind of donut hole of an opportunity for a long time. As the United Center grew and, you know, 200 events a year, it's a vibrant place for activity. Mm-hmm. We're also surrounded by 55 acres of surface parking lots. And, you know, gazing at those parking lots every day while we enjoy the business of parking lots, they don't offer the full maximum opportunity. And I think we were very much encouraged by the growth of the area around us on the west side. So, of course, the growth of Fulton Market, the rise of the Illinois Medical District, the growth of Malcolm X College, which is our closest neighbor to the south. Mm-hmm. And of course, everything happening west and north of us, you know, we felt it was time for us to do more with that land and to create a true, you know, extension of that neighborhood using the United Center and the surrounding area as sort of the energy hub for that development.
Yeah. 1901, what's significant about that?
It's just the address? It's just the address. Yeah. It's okay. Not very creative and it's sort of a placeholder while the neighborhood sort of names itself over time and kind of becomes something a little more.
I was curious.
Yes, exactly.
You co-lead this with Chicago Bulls president and CEO Michael Reinsdorf. This is not your first time, of course, collaborating. Your families have been working together for decades. Tell us more about who else you partnered with for this one.
So the origins of this start between the two families. And I think that's really important. You know, we're not some out-of-town developer coming in to develop land on the west side. We've been there. We've stewarded our respective brands, the Blackhawks and Bulls, for some time now. And, you know, I think the ownership really kind of helps set the vision for where we want to go. And luckily, we have an incredible team at the United Center that knows how to build things, knows how to work with community, work with you know, the political apparatus needed to get things done. And we have been very homegrown in our approach to this. It's the same people that built the United Center. Of course, we've added to our team and built some capabilities, but it's been very, very internally focused. Now, that being said, we've, of course, created groups and outreach with the community. Again, these are our neighbors that we've had for, you know, over 35 years with the United Center and go back sometimes even generations to be at the table with us as we start to think through, and we did in the early stages and up till today, what this project will look like.
Yeah, I want to know more about that because the area around the United Center has been in need of investment for decades.
Yes.
So tell me what you're hearing from Westside residents about the project. Was this a tough sell?
It wasn't a tough sell. I mean, always like anything, there's always some tough conversations, of course, but I think it's the fact that we've been there. You know, we didn't just show up one day and say, you know, hi, it's nice to meet you. Here's the 1901 project. These are the same folks we've been talking to from 30 years back when we built the United Center. And often what we hear are actually very specific needs and feedback that affect their daily life. It could be everything from, you know, access to walking parks or places to take their dogs. It can be sometimes very granular things on top of sort of larger concerns they may have for what the neighborhood will look like. But I think we've moved every step along the way hand in hand with the community group, and we let the community dictate and drive a lot of the conversation, especially as it comes to hiring and making sure we're working with all the right groups. We have good representation on the job site.
How would you describe your personal relationship with Chicago's West Side?
I think it's quite personal. It's family. It's a place that I grew up. I raised my family on the near West Side up in Ukrainian Village. And so I think we have a tremendous amount of pride and care for making sure we get this right, that we build responsibly. And we build something that not only we're proud of for our family, but we're proud for the city of Chicago and for the neighbors on the West Side to feel really good about what the 1901 project can do for the West Side overall.
Now, at the groundbreaking, I thought it was interesting. You said, quote, you know, we are building with this community and not just near it.
Yeah.
Sort of a sentiment that you've been alluding to so far in this conversation. This project, though, it's pretty ambitious.
Sure.
So tell me specifically, who is this for?
So I think it is at the highest level, it's a project for everyone, right? I think we want to be, we also have big ideas in Chicago. We want to be globally recognized and known. And of course, the United Center is a global venue. It's a place that, you know, all eyes on the world tune in, whether it's a championship game or whether it's Oprah's final show or whether it's the DNC, you know, we like the fact that we are a global destination. And so we want to have that level of aspiration, but at the same time being very locally relevant too. A place for anyone in Chicago, regardless of neighborhood, can see themselves represented, can access it. And of course, our closest neighbors feeling that that's something for them as well. So it's ambitious because it is inclusive of so many different groups, not just locally, but globally and regionally, because the United Center in particular is such a strong engine for all that vibrancy that comes through the area.
What can you share about some of the challenges that you've faced in getting this off the ground?
You know, I think like anything, it's just, I mean, these big projects make sure we incorporate all of the points of view, you know, from elected officials to neighbors to labor. I mean, we have to make sure we are addressing all of those concerns, questions they might have. And like any good project, that's where collaboration becomes so important. And I think our team that work on this every day operate with a very collaborative mindset. So every step of the way, we're not doing this in a vacuum. We're doing it with people. And ultimately, everyone at the end of the day feels really proud that they are represented in this project, whether it's, you know, you're part of the construction workforce or whether you're on the architectural side or whether you're just going to be a resident that gets to enjoy it. I think we see a lot of representation in kind of how we got to this stage.
Mm-hmm. I hear you're a music lover. Is that true?
I sure am, yeah.
So that music hall, yeah, I hear, is one of your favorite features. What should folks know about that?
Well, I think what's unique about this is it's the first ground up music venue built at this scale in some time and as far back as I can think of. So when you're thinking about building a music venue for today's world and experience, you can design with every user in mind, meaning you can think about what's the journey like for the music fan to walk through the doors. How quickly can we get them through the doors and into their seat or to enjoy a beverage? What's the experience like for the artist? And what is it like for the bus driver to load in and the crew to have to load the stage? Everything has been thought very thoroughly. So we've been thinking, and then of course the experience once you're in your seat, what are the sight lines like? What's the sound like? Mm-hmm. All of which is really cutting edge and state of the art. And we're quite excited about what that brings to the table. This is not a retrofitted building. This is something truly built from the ground up that gives us a huge opportunity to present music in such a different way. So we're very excited about that. And I think that's it's a big part of what we're building here. We're so known for the sports anchors, but the United Center alone has almost 100 concerts a year. So we have a tremendous amount of music that comes through that site already. And when you add in another set of shows at the music hall, I think it's going to be a real hub for incredible music.
What's the dream performance you want to see?
Oh, everybody
there?
Asked me that. I'm holding that close to my vest, but look, I don't think it can be one show.
Well, maybe
the
artist is listening to WBEZ and they'll hear your request.
We'd love to have something that sort of lives on, whether it's like a year-long program. One of the other things that I think is going to be interesting is we're really building the building to sort of be a hub for potential residencies. So much like you see, and we've started to see in the concert business, artists actually spending more time in Chicago and anchoring their tours in Chicago for weeks, multiple shows, and then becoming a regional draw. So we're really excited about that. So starting to think about what that could look like from an artist standpoint, and more to come on that.
It's Beyonce, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. Well, we got to shoot
kidding,
high, right?
Kidding.
Beyonce residency, let's make it happen. Let's
make
manifest
it happen,
that.
For sure. Let's talk jobs while you're here,
sure.
Danny. There's an emphasis on hiring locally for this. Tell me what kind of jobs are coming to the area. And I'm curious whether you're thinking about our youth, and maybe thinking about opportunities to keep them busy.
Phase one, 2,000 jobs. Long-term, I think we're seeing about 7,000 permanent jobs just from the site itself. And of course, a lot of that goes through our community implementation committee. They're very good about making sure we are working with all the right local groups to get good representation, clearly from a diversity standpoint, but also making sure we employ the youth. We also can provide those pathways to training, which is so important, especially in today's age. So I think workforce development is an incredible benefit of a project like this because it brings so many people into the project. And you think about the types of businesses we have. We have an operational business. We have hospitality going through our space. We're going to have, obviously, we mentioned music.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that we have the opportunity to create mentorship, internship, and pathways into those professions that I think is really, really exciting. So I'm glad you mentioned that because I think one of the benefits is that sort of that job creation and that sort of workforce development, mindset we have to almost every function we have running through this project.
I feel like I can't have you here and not talk about that other sports center development project that's been the subject of much chatter in recent months. Of course, the Chicago Bears Stadium is what I'm referring to. Arlington Heights, Hammond, Indiana, Lakefront. I mean, where do you stand on things? And, do you have any predictions on where the team will end up?
I'm always hesitant to weigh in on other sports teams' dilemmas and choices they make. As a Bears fan, of course, I would love to see them stay in the state of Illinois. And the McCaskies are in a position where, you have to really balance, obviously, the business and what they need to do for their franchise and also balancing that with their fans. So I don't envy the position they're in right now. We've luckily been very focused on our project. And it helps that, again, we've been on this same site and it's our land and it's been our land for almost 100 years.
Yeah.
So it makes our challenges a little bit easier.
Well, congrats on just completing 100 years with the Blackhawks.
Yes, thank you so much.
A difficult couple of seasons are behind us. What are your expectations for next season?
Yeah, we have one of the...
Are we turning the corner?
Turning the corner is the right way to say it. I do think we have one of the most exciting young teams in the National Hockey League. Our prospect pool has been rated the number one prospect pool. And now it's time to turn those prospects into legit NHL players. We're seeing, we're led by obviously our superstar, Connor Bedard. So we saw some moments of that last season. And I really do hope this next season, we start to turn the corner and see some of these young players really establish themselves as NHL players.
Yeah.
So they're an exciting young team. They love each other. They're forming that bond that we saw is really a key ingredient for winning championships. And so I'm really excited. I'm already excited. I mean, we're starting summer, but I'm excited for hockey season already.
Yeah.
And the draft's in a couple of weeks. And so likely we will be acquiring another great player through that process. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah, good times ahead for the Hawks.
Yeah, good to look ahead. I want to turn back to the 1901 project and sort of do the same thing. How do you see that space around the United Center evolving beyond this project in 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah. Well, the first phase really is still capturing a lot of the energy that we know today. So the music hall, the public space, that's a really important thing I want to just make sure to emphasize. Right now, the United Center is primarily a ticketed venue. With the 1901 project, we can free up and we can create free events. We can make spaces for people to roam and enjoy all around there. Of course, we're going to have a hotel. So that first phase is still very entertainment focused. I think the future really will be around those key ingredients of a neighborhood. So you're talking about housing, you're talking about commercial, you're talking about more public space and public realm. And so I think our goal from the very beginning was to establish a neighborhood that's connected to the existing neighborhood, not to create a district that's only alive during events. And so hopefully by 10, 20 years from now, you see a neighborhood born in this little donut hole that is truly connected to our incredible neighbors on the west side already.
Yeah.
And it's the next great neighborhood in Chicago.
Well, in the next few minutes here on the show, I'm going to be talking with a panel of west side residents and business owners, some of them who share concerns about gentrification,
sure, right?
Longtime residents being priced out of the community eventually because of this project. Tell me your message to them.
Look, we are doing this with the community. And I think we need to keep hearing voices. We need to keep finding great solutions so that we keep folks in the neighborhood. We keep the neighborhood growing and strong. Know that we are continuing to hear your voice, and we want to make sure you're at the table with us as we continue on with this project.
That's Danny Wirtz, Chairman and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks and co-chair and partner of the United Center Joint Venture. Thank you so much.
Sasha, thank you so much. Great to see you.
You too. Developers say the 1901 project is the largest private investment in the neighborhood's history, and it's the latest in a series of projects bringing new life and dollars to an area that has endured decades of disinvestment. For the people who live and own businesses there, that history is difficult to ignore. So, as plans for the project take shape, what is top of mind for residents? Next at the table, a panel of Westsiders sharing their thoughts. Marie Henderson is owner of Out of the Past Records. Brian Keith Ellison is board president of the Garfield Park Community Council. And Aisha Jaco is executive director of Westside United and board chair of the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. Earlier, Danny Wirtz talked about making sure the community has a seat at the table and that their voices are heard in the process. So I asked the panel for their reactions to his statement. Aisha went first.
I think that's spot on to what we've witnessed with Westside United and the work that Danny and his team has done to engage the hyperlocal community around 1901 and then also coming to the table to partner with collaboratives like Westside United. We have a lot of similarity in terms of our workforce goals, where we also want to hire locally, where we have 10,000 jobs we want to bring in at or above the living wage by 2030. Mm-hmm. So a project like 1901 is a great partner for that. Sarah Gudiarn is part of our Westside Anchor Committee. We also have goals around capital investment. And so a project like 1901 is a partner in our goal of hoping to convene and catalyze $1.25 billion in corridor investment, affordable housing, and hospital-led investment in the region. And so what we've witnessed is a table being set that's inclusive, that not only includes community residents, but those that are indigenous and legacy residents, but also community-based organizations that are working towards the same goal.
Brian, you're nodding. Tell me your thoughts.
I am. I think Danny touched on a lot of the important things that are needed in order to successfully execute the type of effort that they're trying to do. And the number one thing is just community involvement, you know, hearing the voice of the community. And as Aisha said, to ensure that legacy residents are not priced out of this community, that affordable housing remains a focus on the developments that are happening, as well as the Madison Street corridor development that's been decimated, you know, mm-hmm. back in the 60s.
Marie, what comes to mind?
I agree with them. And I really say this is a good thing that it's coming down because it's bringing more residents to the neighborhood. But we also want to realize, like they say, we want to push the people that are there, you know, like the people, small businesses. We want them to stay there and we want them to bring more into the neighborhood. And everybody talks about the neighborhood and it's bad, but it's bad everywhere. But what we're trying to do is leave it where the residents that live there mm-hmm. can have a share in things, and they need somewhere where they can shop and enjoy themselves. And I always mention, too, that we have a lot of senior buildings over there. So we want to accommodate those seniors. We have five buildings within our block radius, they have nowhere to shop. So we're hoping that when this project up here, that it'll look out for the seniors as well as the other people that are in that neighborhood.
Sure. Tell me your history with the West Side, Marie. How long have you been there, and what should we know about your business out of the past records?
Well, we started out in 1963 as a photography studio and record shop in 66. And we've been there for a while. My first shop was at ASAP Pulaski, which is burnt down now. Mm. And we started out as my husband and I as just wanted to rent it, you know, make our own business started. And we went from there to 10 stores. We closed them down. We had the 2 stores on Madison Street. That was one in 3900 block, which is now is gone. And I'm now at 4407 West Madison Street as the Out of the Past Records. And we've been there since 1986.
And wow.
We cater to the neighborhood. So everyone calls me mom. And all the children that grew up around, they always come back to see how I'm doing. And I'm still in the neighborhood. I've been living in that neighborhood since 1963.
Wow, that's
incredible.
I have
my home there. Yeah, so.
Tell me about your history on the West Side, Ryan.
I've been involved in the Garfield Park area since 94, 95,
okay.
Where I first lived over right off of Keeler and Madison. Worked as a board director's member with Bethel New Life, which is a not-for-profit CDC based on the West Side. I operated a business out of East Garfield Park for a number of years, designing and making custom furniture. And now I am currently living in East Garfield Park and working as a consultant for POA, which is a Boston-based developer that focuses on affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. You gave us a little bit of a teaser there, Aisha, but tell us more about Westside United.
Sure. So we are a health equity collaborative partnered with Rush University Medical Center, Cook County Health, Lurie, Sinai Chicago, UI Health, and our big, hairy, audacious goal is addressing Chicago's 17-year life expectancy gap between the Loop and the West Side. We say the West Side is comprised of 10 communities, and so that work and the project of 1901 is set to fulfill the ideals of the community that we spoke to at the start of this work, and it was around asking them what they needed to have a better quality of life for us to work together to think about how to address the life expectancy gap. And what folks said was they want safe neighborhoods, they want jobs, they want equitable access to healthcare, and that they wanted meaningful things for young people to do / equitable access to education. So when you think about something like 1901, it checks off all of those boxes in terms of what residents said they wanted when we launched this work 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we think about where we're moving to with more distinct goals, as mentioned earlier, around hiring, investment. We also want to see a 10% reduction in infant mortality in the West Side,
yeah.
And then a 1% reduction in cardiovascular disease risk. And that only happens with multi-sectored, multi-pronged collaboration.
And Aisha, we've spent some time talking a lot about that life expectancy gap piece that you just mentioned, right? And for folks who aren't aware, West Garfield Park residents are expected to live on average until 67 years old compared to Loop residents living to about 87. This is the widest gap, death gap in Chicago and the biggest gap of any big U.S. city. Which is striking. So it sounds to me like there is a connection, thinking of your work, between health and wellness and the kind of disinvestment that we've been talking about here.
Absolutely.
On the West Side.
And we've seen a recent increase, actually, since we've started the work. So life expectancy in Garfield Park has increased since the last 20 years. And that now that life expectancy is close to 71 in places like West Garfield. And another thing that's very important to our work as a convener are projects like the Sankofa Village Wellness Center, where we're right next door to Out of the Past Records. That's curated by the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. Mm-hmm. You have Erie Family Health, Rush, the YMCA, all co-convening in this space for a one-door approach for health. So you can get your health care there, your recreation. And then once you leave your appointment, you can go down and buy a 45 or whatever you're looking for from Out of the Past Records. So
yeah.
We're really excited about the renaissance happening on the West Side within the Madison corridor.
Marie and Brian, I want to get more of a sense from you as to what folks are saying in the area when it comes to gentrification, right? Are there conversations happening about the idea of being pushed out, for instance? Brian, you first.
You know, those conversations happen a lot, and that's the biggest concern with what's happening over in the Garfield Park area. You know, the Garfield Park Community Council, the organization whose board I chair, focuses on the retention of both legacy residents being able to stay in the community, as well as the development of affordable housing and other commercial amenities that are needed in the area. But there's a the word that I think I used yesterday was an excited apprehension about the 1901 project. Excuse me. Because Danny does have a vision and a goal based on the important needs of the community. But, you know, we just need to make sure that it doesn't slide off track. And I think organizations like Aisha's, the Garfield Park Community Council, and just other members, other partners that are involved in this will help ensure that, you know, it doesn't slide away from the original intent.
Marie, you're one of those legacy residents that, Ryan's talking about.
I appreciate it. And also that the neighborhood itself, renovating it, is good because they're doing a good job. They're bringing stuff in that we really need. And housing, like she said, we do need the affordable housing. And we need recreation for, you say, the younger folks as well as the older folks, because you have people that sitting at home doing anything. But it's great to see that it's all coming, and I appreciate it because I'm looking forward to more jobs coming into the neighborhood that would help the younger folks, something that they can do, train them so they won't have to be idle-minded all the time. So that's great if it all can help do that.
I'm going to stick with you for another moment here, Marie, because I want to go back to the past year. You've been around for a while in the area, and you've been in business with the record shop since the 60s. What was the West Side like back then? This is before the riots that we're about to talk about.
Well, when I first moved here in 63, the West Side was it was like a state street.
Yeah. And you came from Mississippi, right?
I came from Mississippi. But I moved over in 63 after I got married there. We bought a home over there in 1963. And it was like Madison Street from, you say, from Hamlin all the way down to maybe Laramie. It was like a shopping mall center, and you never had to go anywhere because everything was there. We had the grocery stores, the drug stores, eateries. Mm-hmm. It was just really like downtown area for us. But after the riot, everything changed. So now we are like they say, the devastated move where we have nothing, no grocery stores, no drug stores. Everything is gone.
What do you remember most about the riots of 1968?
We don't want to go into the funniest thing was, well, we had our stores there then, and my son was outside playing in the little gameway. And he said, "Mama, what's going on?" I said, "I don't know, but come in because it looks bad." So somebody came to the gangway and said, "Who owned this store?" And I said, "Well, I do." He said, "Well, if you're black, we're going to spray it." And he sprayed a B sign on the window. And they walked away from my store in the 3900 block. And from then on, when I got home, I walked home through the crowd with my three children. And when we got on our porch, it looked like a movie. Everything was coming down the street, refrigerators, stoves, TV, everything. They was just bringing stuff down, you know. It was like a chaos. And then when you walk back out the next day, it was like a devastated, like a war zone. Everything was burnt or tore up.
So much was lost.
Everything, stores, clothing stores, things that we normally had to do. They just demolished the place. And so, and it hasn't really recovered yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because we still don't have the things that we necessarily need in that area.
Yeah, Brian and Aisha, pick up where she left out. Tell me more about how the lack of investment hurt the West Side community. Aisha, first.
I think it's very interesting for what you just painted that 4 years after, or I'm sorry, 4 months after you had the Democratic National Convention in 1968, actually where 1901 is coming. And so what I inherited as someone who also grew up in the West Side in the 90s, the Bulls in that era of championships, growing up at Madison and Albany, being part of the unofficial parades and celebration, to fast forwarding to my role today, is to be part of the renaissance and rebirth and to be part of a collaboration that has brought a $50 million wellness center in that same corridor across the street from Marie is so important. And so in terms of helping to restart what that corridor used to be. It is that shared investment, the commitment from local philanthropy, like the Pritzker Traubert Foundation, where in Garfield Park, we brought home the $10 million Chicago Prize to build that building. So for me, it is certainly the principle of Sankofa, looking back to remember and to reclaim what Marie just shared with us, and then to think about the future of the Madison Corridor, which includes the Sankofa Village Wellness Center, that concept that also brings an art center, the K, which is a small business incubator. The Blackhawks have been charitable with a community grocer initiative in that community. So I am excited to see this continuum of repair and rebuilding from the ashes left behind from the riots and the Democratic Convention in 1968.
Brian, what was that conversation with Marie bringing up for you as she was painting such a vivid picture?
You know, the whole thing was just really unfortunate on a lot of different levels. And a lot of people suffered trauma that is, for the most part, unrecognized. You know, people don't really understand the trauma that a lot of people suffered that you know, throughout that whole incident. And I think it's great that we are now in a position where the renaissance is starting to happen with the Wellness Center, with buildings like the Hatchery, with the amount of development that's happening in Garfield Park. And
so you would call it a renaissance of sorts?
I would. Yeah. Yes, that word came up as well. And I would say that it is a renaissance of sorts because there's a focused effort to kind of do the right thing, I guess, in bringing back some of the things that were lost, you know, as a result of the riots, as well as things that are needed as it relates to, you know, the commercial development and the affordable housing.
Tell me more about what the Garfield Park Community Council has been up to.
Well, the Garfield Park Community Council is an organization that focuses on creating an equitable, sustainable area of Chicago on the west side. We are involved in development. We are involved in programs that are being run out of the Hatchery. We partnered with the Garfield Park Community Right to Wellness in terms of them being built,
right,
as well as some involvement with the 1901 project as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to hear from all of you here as we begin to wrap. What else? We've got the ear of so many people right now. What else do you want folks to know about the West Side, about the neighborhood, about its residents, and maybe even just your hopes for the neighborhood? You first, Aisha.
Well, I would say that when you think about where 1901 is coming in the Near West Side, there's so much history and so many people, Nancy B. Jefferson, Major Adams, Maureen Woodson from the Henry Horner Project, who built the Mothers Guild for support. So this is a community. You also have Fred Hampton, the Black Panthers, and their Illinois office in this same community. Mm-hmm. So it is ripe with history. You have Miles Square Clinic that was born in this community. So I think it is so important to continue to do the work to engage the people that have been there, to also bring along the young people. But these are folks that know what their community needs to make it better. They want to be involved. And so I think that continued investment is going to be so important because we do want 20, 30, 50 years from now, the people that live there now to still have legacy. So I think it's important to continue to have those conversations, invite them, invest in them, and we'll continue to see sustainable
that
investment.
Seat at the table is very important. Brian?
Yeah, I would agree. I'd agree 100%. And I think that we're in a position now where things can finally be done right, you know, for lack of a better word. And as long as those efforts stay focused in terms of a lot of the things that were discussed earlier today, I think we'll be in a good position to really kind of transition this community back to a place where it once was.
Last word to you, Marie. What are your hopes for the West Side, the place you've lived for so long?
Well, I'm hoping that we get more minority businesses over there because we do need it. We get all other businesses in our area, but we do need minority businesses and something that's going to benefit the neighborhood as well as the young folks. And I really would appreciate it to see that since they are working with us, the two committees, we be able to work together to bring that out.
Absolutely. Marie Henderson, owner of Out of the Past Records. Aisha Jaco, Executive Director of Westside United and Board Chair of Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. And Brian Keith Ellison, Board President of the Garfield Park Community Council. Thank you all so much.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Now we'll turn to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, Chicago Sun-Times health reporter Elvia Malagon, and Sun-Times federal courts reporter John Seidel. Somebody cue that Nelly song because it is getting hot in here. No, seriously, it is getting pretty humid out. So Claire weighed in with some more information on how long it'll last and how to stay cool.
We're going to see a high near 92 today. So brace yourselves for that. Already up to 81 along the lake, which usually for us closer to the water takes a little longer to heat up, but not today.
Wow, early in the morning, already past 80. Are cooling centers open?
Cooling centers are open today and tomorrow. Community service centers in Auburn Gresham, Garfield, Martin Luther King, North Area, South Chicago will all be open from 9 to 5 today. And then 6 senior centers also open. And then you should remember, you know, pretty much any public line, library, any of the Park District field houses with AC, you know, you're welcome to take a load off and sit down, cool down. And the pools are open June 19th.
Oh, yeah. Coming
so get
up.
Get ready for that. Get Very your suit soon. Out.
All right. I want to turn to something else here, Claire. A little disturbing. Police are investigating a burning object in Grant Park. What's going on there?
Yeah, this was a large burning cross discovered at Grant Park yesterday. Police said they're investigating how it ended up there, the motive behind it. But essentially, video was just taken by a driver who was passing by, and it shows a wooden cross fully engulfed in flames as it was leaning up against a tree. The flames even spread onto the bark of that tree trunk in a very, very popular tourist area. Mm-hmm. So the Chicago Fire Department confirmed that it was indeed a flaming cross and that they put it out. No one is in custody. No one has been hurt.
But seeing a burning cross in 2026 in a park.
Quite the spectacle.
Downtown Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, we had, sometimes I believe, tried to send reporters down there just as quickly as possible. Violet Miller did a little bit of digging on that. She was covering the story. And some of these cross burnings in recent years have led to pretty significant charges in other states. So we'll see if police can track down who did this and why.
John, you have been paying super close attention to what's been happening with this group of Operation Midway Blitz protesters who came to be known as the Broadview Six. Mm-hmm. A judge made some grand jury transcripts in their case public yesterday. How big of a deal is that update?
I mean, it's a really big deal. It's extremely unusual for us to get this kind of a glimpse into the proceedings before a grand jury. I mean, just so people know, grand juries operate in secret. They only hear from prosecutors and their witnesses. There's no judge in there. And it's we don't really know much about what goes on. Sometimes witness testimony comes out at trial later on, but this is really unusual for this to come out. And we learned the details of alleged misconduct by prosecutors in that grand jury room. For example, a prosecutor basically telling grand jurors to trust her, that she would not bring a case, that she would not try and charge a case that shouldn't be charged. Mm-hmm. That is kind of like prosecutor 101. You don't do that. These are the exact words that prosecutors are taught not to say to grand jurors. Mm-hmm. She's in there saying that there was an episode where, a grand juror was pushing back with some profane language about this Broadview 6 case. And she told that grand juror to excuse themselves. Again, it's up to the court to excuse a grand juror, not a prosecutor. So not only is it really unusual for us to see what went on in the grand jury, but this is really unusual activity by the prosecutors.
And for folks who haven't been following, remind us what made this Broadview 6 case so significant in the first place.
It was really unusual when it was brought. So this all revolves around a protest on September 26th outside the immigration facility in Broadview where people were held during Operation Midway Blitz. And an ICE agent in an SUV drove through a crowd slowly, to be clear, like 2 miles an hour or something. But on his way to the facility, drove through a crowd that this crowd surrounded the vehicle, pushed against it. They did some damage. Someone apparently scratched pig into the side of the SUV. Mm-hmm. From that crowd, 6 people were charged. It was a much larger crowd than that.
Most of them were involved in local Democratic politics, and they were charged with conspiracy, what the prosecutors later said was a spontaneous conspiracy, which all raised questions about if you go to a protest and other people, for example, do damage to an SUV,
right.
Could you be charged and held responsible for the activity of other protesters? So, and of course, there was one of the defendants was Kat Abu Ghazaleh, who was running for Congress at the time. So that all made it prominent and significant
right.
and controversial.
And as for these secret grand jury transcripts, what's next? Or is that all over?
No, there's I think, much more to come. Judge April Perry, who first revealed this misconduct, is she's talked about the possibility of sanctions and hearings. Defense attorneys in this case are seeking attorney's fees. I'm sure there's going to be other litigation. Mm-hmm. And the damage is spreading to other cases as well, where this prosecutor allegedly, had some of the same activity in other
right.
cases.
Elvia, let's turn to you. A researcher from Northwestern was kicked out of a medical conference about diabetes for sharing reading materials.
Yeah, that's right. Justin Ryder, who works here in Chicago, both at Northwestern and at Lurie Children's Hospital, he has gone to this conference every year for about a decade, and he said it's pretty normal for people to pass out materials. Him and a group of other researchers were passing out an editorial that had already been published in a publication called Diabetes Care, which is actually published by the American Diabetes Association.
Right.
So this was already a published material, and it was really drawing attention to some of the cuts that have been happening in recent years, in particular to biomedical research. And of course, it was critical of the Trump administration. So as they were passing this around, private security and local police there escorted him and other researchers out of the building, confiscated their conference badges, and they were told that if they tried to enter the conference, they would be arrested.
Goodness.
So, of course, he said, he didn't try to enter. He stayed away. But this has really drawn a lot of attention from the scientific and medical community.
I'm sure. What has the organization said, the American Diabetes Association?
Well, they released a statement saying that they were complying with the IRS regulations of being a nonpartisan organization and maintaining that environment at their conference and events. But we do know there is a bit of turmoil going on because of this. MedPage today reported that two leaders of the ADA have since resigned. And right now there's a petition circulating online in the research, scientific community, really calling for the ADA to do something. And of course, when I talked to Justin Ryder, he mentioned he would like a public apology from the organization for what happened to him and others.
Over to you, Claire. America is turning 250 this year.
You don't say.
In just a matter of days, really, next month. The College of DuPage, however, is celebrating by honoring American artists. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is actually kind of neat. It's called Walking with Giants, a new exhibition. That's literally what it is, Walking with Giants. They're kind of spread out at these plywood sculptures across the campus. They're quite large.
I hear there's a 10-foot tall Dolly Parton.
Yes, they're averaging about 7 to 10 feet. Dolly Parton is one of the sculptures that are depicting artists that are, influential in American history. So we got Dolly, we've got Aretha Franklin, even Bob Fosse is on the
yes.
College of DuPage campus, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and they are on display until October 18th, and really just sort of a walking tour by local artists Rich Lowe and Judith Mayer.
Other stories that you're following?
Yeah, we're going to talk Bears forever, it seems, but Chicago Bear Kalen Williams, we know, has established himself as a top-tier QB, but now he's broken the top 10 in terms of league merch. People are buying up the Kalen Williams merch, it seems.
What, T-shirts?
This is T-shirts, jerseys, bobbleheads, also pet items are one of the things that the NFL's
pet sweaters.
Players Association. Collars and leashes are a big one. I've got a Bears collar for my girl, Gloria. Not a Kalen Williams specific, but they track
I'll
sales
have to get you one.
Over 12 months. I'll hold you to that. And Kalen Williams ranked 8th on the list. Bills quarterback Josh Allen took the number one position merch. Yeah, pretty cool for Caleb.
Yeah. John, Governor Pritzker, he spoke yesterday about the Bears stadium, and he's putting blame on the team. Is that right?
That's my understanding, just from reading the coverage by our colleague, Mitch Armantrout. I think he's putting blame on the team. I think he's putting the blame on others as well. I'm looking at a quote here from the governor where he talked about a package that had been put together that would have allowed the Bears to stick around. He said there were some people who either through confusion or direct malice against the bill killed it. And I think from just reading the coverage from afar, as I've done, is, you know, I think there was maybe some discord with lawmakers from Chicago who don't want to see the Bears leave Chicago for Arlington Heights or Hammond, or, you know, it makes no difference to them, right?
Right.
They're leaving Chicago. So,
well, let's hear a little bit from him, because he's also saying, you know, the team's done this before. They've said that they're going to move and they were still trying to negotiate at the same time with other parties. Let's hear Pritzker.
There was some discussion with the city of Chicago after they told everybody that they wanted to be in Arlington Heights. And you can imagine for Chicago legislators and for everybody considering the bill that was put forward, it's confusing. Which one do you want?
So does it look like he'll likely call for a special session about this?
I mean, I get the sense that there probably will be a special session. I think he pointed out that lawmakers have the ability to call a special session as well. All I know is that, just, you know, from reading this latest announcement from the Bears, again, just as a reader, I get the sense that this is not over. This is just the latest chapter.
There's so much more.
I don't think any of this is done yet.
He just gave us a little bit of a heart attack on Friday just to wake everybody up. Yeah. Elvia, faith leaders, they are calling on lawmakers to care about their access to health care as much as they care about the Bears staying in Chicago. Tell us the story.
That's right. My coworker, Kristen Schorsch, who covers health for WBZ, she spent the day at a community meeting yesterday where religious leaders were really calling to bring more attention to the closure of West Suburban Medical Center. And they really want as much urgency, and as much as we're hearing about the Bears, they also think this is important. In particular, this is really important for people to have access to healthcare on the West Side. Kristen has written about the healthcare disparities and outcomes. So for folks, they're really trying to bring attention to this, and they're looking for solutions. And it sounds like there's a lot of people that are really trying to weigh in and figure out how to bring back this resource to the community.
Well, before I let you go, tell me what other stories you're following.
I'll be following the one-day strike that's happening tomorrow at St. Mary's of Nazareth. That's a hospital in Ukrainian Village here in Chicago.
Who's on strike? The nurses?
The nurses are on strike. They're upset because 6 nurses were recently fired just as they were trying to unionize the staff there. Of course, the hospital says that they did not engage in retaliation and the nurses weren't fired because of that. But there will be a strike tomorrow and I'll be there seeing what happens.
And John, what's on your radar?
You know, Broadview 6 is sucking up a lot of the oxygen right now, but I feel like I can't come here and not say the name Michael Madigan. I'll just point out that his attorneys recently missed a kind of key filing deadline in the appeals court, which basically means that I think he has roughly 3 months now to file that petition with the Supreme Court. We'll see if that happens.
We'll keep an eye. Elvia Malagon and John Seidel with the Chicago Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.